Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Where would we be without horses? More than any other domesticated animal, they are credited with advancing human history in profound ways, from farming to wars to colonization of the western frontier of the United States. And we love our horse stories too, don't we? From War Horse to Flicka to Secretariat and many, many more. It would be easy to leave it at that, of course. But in this day and age, horses are a luxury for most of us. They are big, they are expensive to care for properly, not to mention feed. Last summer, the price to feed a horse skyrocketed, forcing many to sell at auction or abandon their horses. And that was on top of the Great Recession of 2008. Horse sanctuaries across the country were turning away these orphans, and many still are. With that trend in mind, writer Allison Milianis and Karen Tweedy Holmes set out to document the work of equine rescue organizations and sanctuaries across the U.S. The name of their book is Horse Sanctuary, with a foreword by Temple Grandin. We have a link to the book's website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And then coming up later, we'll hear from the operator of one such outfit in Southeast Ohio that is written about in the book. But joining us now is Karen Tweedy Holmes. Her photographs illustrate the stories in Horse Sanctuary. Karen Tweedy Holmes' work is widely exhibited at museums across the U.S. It's appeared in National Geographic, The New York Times, and Time, among others. And we welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here.
This isn't just a random journalistic query for you and Allison. You both grew up riding horses.
Yes, we did. And I was horse obsessed from day one. I was born in the year of the horse, and it took.
You rode horses for many years, but what did inspire or trigger the book at this point?
Well, I'd been interested in sanctuary work of all kinds, not just horses. I'd been photographing wolves and raptors and primates and horses with an idea of doing a book about that. And Allison got in touch with me, and we decided to pool our resources and do a book. And then it was the project was pitched to Rizzoli International. And they said, we love your idea, but we want to limit it to horses. We think that would have great appeal. And we said, oh, we can do that. We both love horses so much. And so I set out on a 16,000-mile trip to document the work of 13 sanctuaries in depth. And Allison went to all those same sanctuaries, usually not at the same time
okay.
that I did, and interviewed the people who were doing the rescue work. And that's how it began. It's a labor of love, and it lasted altogether, if you count all the ins and outs of it, about 4.5 years.
There are many horse sanctuaries. Do we know how many in the United States?
No, but every state has some. And when we were researching them, we found that certain ones appealed to us for reasons that they had special programs, which I'll talk to you about mm-hmm. if you like. And also some that had just come to our attention. I had been contributing small funds to some of them, so I knew about their work. And we made a list, and then we crossed a couple off the list and add a couple more. And that's how it came out to 13.
I was going to ask you how you did whittle it down to 13. There had to be some...
Very hard. Well, we wanted geographical diversity. We wanted diversity of type. There are some that rescue wild horses. There are some that rescue horses abused in the drug industry. There are some who rescue, as you will hear later, foals from the nursemare industry. And there are some who rescue thoroughbreds off the track, and some who rescue horses bound for slaughter.
My guest is Karen Tweedy Holmes. She's a photographer. Her work illustrates a new book. It's called Horse Sanctuary. It's written by Allison Milianis. If you have a question or comment for Karen Tweedy Holmes, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture book. How did you decide how much? Because it's just lusciously illustrated. I mean, there's picture after you're so excited to turn the page to see the next beautiful picture.
Well, I've been photographing horses most of my life, and I presented Rizzoli's designer with hundreds of pictures, about between 50 and 60 from each sanctuary. She made 98% of the final selection and did a gorgeous layout. We couldn't have asked for better from Rizzoli. They were wonderful on every aspect of the work. And then at the end, she asked me, are there any you'd like to sub that you feel absolutely must be in the book? And I said, yes, we have to have a picture of a veterinarian, and we have to have a picture of a farrier, because these two sorts of individuals are pivotal to the work of sanctuaries. So Dr. Ryan Rutter in Athens, Ohio, appears in Last Chance Corral's chapter, and a woman named, Marsha Herman, is the farrier for Lope, Texas. She works with barefoot thoroughbreds in Texas, and there are very few women in the farrier trade.
The farrier trade
blacksmith.
Being the blacksmith.
But she doesn't actually do the bending of iron for shoes, because that's not the kind of work she's best suited for, and she loves working with barefoot horses. So those two pictures are in there, plus a couple of portraits of individual horses that I fell in love with that I felt should be in the book. But other than that, it was the designer's choice, and she did a great job.
There was one, I guess, if I had to pick out of just off the top of my head that I fell in love with, it was the stallion and the Mustang Ranch, I think.
The Black Hills?
The Black Hills stallion.
Don Juan. Yes.
Don Juan. Wow.
Oh, he's phenomenal. He's a Soraya. Interestingly, he is removed from his band of mares for several months a year as a contraceptive measure. Those horses are also darted with the porcine contraceptive to keep them from having foals, because there are 600 horses there, 13,000 acres for them to live on. And you might think that's a lot of space, but they need a lot of grass. They run free. They have the three things that horses need: food, friends, and freedom. So that is the most remarkable place. And Don Juan lives with, when he's with them, about 30, so a little more than 30 mares who vie for his attention.
I love the picture, the way you captured him on his way out.
Oh, yes. He postures
I'm
for
back.
Them. And I was in the truck pulling the van that had him when they hadn't seen him for some months. I've never seen anything like it. They rushed the van and stood around waiting for him to emerge. And then they chased him down and said, me, pay attention to me. And it was very dear. And Susan, who runs part of it, said that he can lose 150 pounds with their attentions, just being constantly badgered. And eventually, when he's lost that much weight, they take him out for a while.
They have to take care of him, too.
Oh, yes.
James in Columbus, you're on the air with Karen Tweedy Holmes. Welcome, James.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I admire your work. Very sounds like a labor of love, no doubt. My question are there any points of frustration where, you know, you've been out there seeing, I guess you mentioned that the price of hay has skyrocketed, causing this large number of animals now that need sanctuary. Are there any sort of low-hanging fruit opportunities where there are things that could be done that aren't being done to sort of mitigate this problem?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we really haven't talked about all the different reasons why. It costs one of them, but when it comes to the Mustangs, that's a different story.
Well, they have to drop hay for the Mustangs in South Dakota because the winters there can produce 4-foot snowfalls and the horses can't dig to the grass. So they drop hay for them, and I believe they spend about $500,000 a year on hay. Hay is a problem right now all over the country because of the cost of fuel. It has to be transported to so many places, and also because farmers are growing more corn and less hay. What can be done is more outreach to more people who are concerned and who will give funds to the various sanctuaries, not just the ones we cover, but many, many others. But it's extremely important that the sanctuaries be well run, because managing them is difficult. And a couple of the women who run, two of them that I know of, have business degrees and do very well with that aspect of it.
James, we'll keep talking about other reasons why as the show goes on, because it's a good question. There are so many pathways to a sanctuary for a lot of these horses. There's a lot of different examples. So thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was surprised at the size of some of the sanctuaries. Of course, the one for the Mustangs is huge, but still small compared to what they
most of them
naturally.
Yeah.
Some of them are just several acres.
Tiny, yes. They're tiny, and they don't. A smart sanctuary will not take in more horses than they can afford to deal with and have the room for. And I've seen some that have 8 horses, some who have 15, some who have 75. It's all over the map in terms of size. And I can tell you that even if they only have 8, next year they might have 20 because it's so hard to turn them away. But the smart ones are very careful about that.
And some businesses call themselves sanctuaries, but actually some of the horses at these sanctuaries are victims of those. They say, well, we'll take on your horse. We'll take care of it if you can't.
Well, sure. There's fraudulence everywhere, too,
right.
Even in the sanctuary world. We were very careful to choose sanctuaries that were viable and established, and some of which had accreditation from the global overseer of such places, because we didn't want to get involved with some that have bad business practices and end up. A lot of people want to start a sanctuary, for example, and will take in some horses, not realizing what they've gotten into in terms of expense, and then go bust within the first year.
One big problem is hoarders. That comes up over and over and over again in the book, where we have stories of horses mm-hmm. that were victimized by hoarders. Can you talk about that a little bit? It's rampant, apparently.
Yes. It's another situation of people loving them too much without thought. And I know of one, I'd rather not talk about who it is, but
sure.
Somebody who took in, after caring for as many as 400 animals, took in another 100 with insufficient help. He had 2 full-time people, 2 part-time cowboys, and some volunteers. And that extra 100 put him over the top. And all those animals had to be moved elsewhere because the people who were taking care of them simply didn't have enough hours in the day and enough energy to supply all their needs. And it was pretty crazy. And it's a pity because it was a wonderful sanctuary while it existed. And people do just take on more than they can handle. This is very common. But the great ones don't. And you can tell the difference. Hillary Wood at Front Range Equine Rescue in Colorado never purchases anything she cannot pay for at that moment. And that includes buildings and halters and hay and everything. And she's one of the ones with the business degree. She's so committed to saving as many as she can, but just as many as she can.
If you have a question or comment, my guest once again, Karen Tweedy Holmes. Her work, her photographs illustrate a new book. It's called Horse Sanctuary. It's written by Allison Milionis. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thanks for joining us today on 89.7 NPR News, 51 degrees with some rain. Showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day, a high of 72. More rain for tonight. Some of those storms could produce some heavy rain, a low of 49 degrees. And then partly sunny with a slight chance of showers on Friday, a high of 57. Support comes from Marburn Academy, offering a new high school ADHD summer program for 8th, 9th, and 10th graders, where students can learn to increase working memory and study skills while also earning scuba diving certification. Details online at marburnacademy.org. And support comes from Ohio State's Department of Neurology, conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can limit the effects of traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey and how to opt out of the study, are at protectiii.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about horse sanctuaries in the United States and the growing demand for their refuge as the economy and the cost of hay and health care force more and more Americans to give up their horses. Still with us is Karen Tweedy Holmes, who collaborated with author Allison Milianis on a new book called Horse Sanctuary. We have a link for more information about the book on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. One rescue, at least one sanctuary, specializes in rescuing the offspring of mares that are impregnated so their urine can be used for hormone replacement therapies. Can you talk about that, how it works,
sure,
and why they can't be with their foals?
Well, actually, that sanctuary rescues mares and foals.
Okay.
And the woman who founded it, Karen Pomeroy, it's called Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary. It's in Green Valley, Arizona. She rescued a group of foals at 11 months who would otherwise have been slaughtered, and then later rescued a great many mares and continues to do so. PMU, pregnant mares' urine, mares are catheterized. Their urine, and they're usually draft breeds because they produce more urine, so they're very large horses. Catheters are pushed up their bladders. They are milked of their urine. They stand in straight stalls most of their lives. When their foals are born, they're generally slaughtered, and then they're made pregnant again. And this goes on and on. About 6,000 mares, as near as anyone can tell, are affected in this way each year. So Karen purchases these mares. She has to go to Canada for many of them at this point. She wants to save as many as she can. She's currently responsible for about 75 horses, mares, and foals. She also rescues horses used in the illegal drug trade from Mexico. So that's a whole separate issue. Mm-hmm. They're thrown away on the desert to starve, and she pulls them in when she can.
And they're usually stolen horses to begin with.
Oh, yeah. They're in terrible shape. And she, what she does is love these horses, feed them till they're healthy again, and find adoptive homes for them. All the sanctuaries work very hard to find adoptive homes that are suitable for horses in their care.
Are the businesses that produce the or collect the urine, are they helpful to the sanctuaries? In other words, when they have foals, new foals that they're going to get rid of, do they try to find a sanctuary to send them to?
Not to my knowledge.
And then what about the mares? I mean, when are they used up? When are they done?
When they can no longer produce an infant.
Okay. And then they are going to go to the auction or
yes,
whatever. And auctions, what typically happens at auctions? What are
auctions,
they?
Are conducted, of course, all over the country. And among the people who attend these auctions are individuals known as kill buyers. The kill buyers buy for a certain amount on the pound and then stuff the horses into trucks without food or water and send them to Mexico or Canada to be slaughtered, because since 2007, the United States has not permitted horses to be slaughtered for human consumption. That is a huge controversy that's going on right now. And there are many outfits that want to open slaughterhouses here again, but horses in the United States are treated with so many drugs, including one called Bute, a painkiller that is, in fact, a carcinogen for people. And so horse meat is not safe to eat. However, the flesh from the horses that are slaughtered are sent to Europe and Asia for dinner plates. So the kill buyers come to these auctions and buy a lot of these horses. You don't know who's going to buy your horse when you put it for auction. And I think a lot of people who have to get rid of a horse because they can't afford to keep it don't know what the outcome is going to be. And it's important that they do know that that's a very real possibility. And the horses that go to slaughter in Mexico and Canada are not old, tired, sick horses. They're usually pretty healthy horses in terms of, you know, young and strong. So it's not just a matter of a kind of euthanasia. It isn't that at all.
Yeah. When it comes to the horses that are impregnated for their urine, you said that happens in Canada.
The horse, yes, that's mostly done in Canada now.
Why is that?
I think the drug companies that do that are mostly in Canada
okay,
right now. And they it's important also for women who are interested in hormone replacement therapy to know that there are artificial alternatives to the drugs, one of which is called Premarin.
That's an alternative?
Premarin is one of the PMU drugs.
Okay.
It comes from, again, the words pregnant mare's urine. But the alternatives are synthetics. So it's important to do a little research and find out what they are so that you can avoid using the PMU drugs.
There's a great story about the Blackburn Correctional Complex. Mm. It's one of several started by the Thoroughbred Retirement Fund that was established in 1982. First of all, why was that fund started?
Well, racehorses who can't or won't race need a place to be. And the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation put together a lot of money to support older horses and horses who have been injured or can't race anymore for one reason or another. And some of those horses have been donated to the program at Blackburn, which is a minimum security prison in Lexington, Kentucky. And a wonderful woman named Linda Dyer runs the equine program there for inmates. Most of these men haven't dealt with horses before. She chooses for the program people who've had some horse experience and people who've had none, and teaches them all manner of aspects of horse care. The idea is that perhaps when they leave prison, they will be able to find jobs in the racing industry because there's so many farms down there. There's no guarantee that they will, but at least they have some skills that they didn't have before. What's really thrilling is seeing how the men respond to working with horses. It's beautiful.
And how it helps them,
yes,
personally.
Oh, absolutely. It becomes an animal they're responsible for. They learn how to feed it and care for it, medicate it. There is no riding program there. They don't learn how to ride because of insurance problems. But it's a wonderful program, and she administers an exam at the end, and if they do well on the exam, 3 months are lopped off their sentences. And they sign up. It's a very serious program, and it's beautiful to see. And all those horses were injured on the racetrack. And
not every sanctuary, like Blackburn, they don't get the horses to be ridden. We talked about the Mustangs, of course, the wild horses. They're not ridden. But there's others where this is a place where these horses don't ever have to do anything again but just
be. Yes, be and accept the care and attention of people who care about them.
But some of them do try to rehabilitate them and
adopt
them out.
Lope, Texas is one. They take thoroughbreds who are not greatly injured, rehabilitate them, and give them training in some cases, for new vocations as trail horses or even polo ponies, as show horses. And she works only with thoroughbreds who aren't to race anymore. But, yes, they're very much ridden. She finds adoptive homes for them.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Karen Tweedy Holmes. Her photographic work illustrates the new book, Horse Sanctuary. It's a beautiful book, beautiful photographs, wonderful stories about 13 sanctuaries across the country, including one in Ohio. And we will be talking to the founder and operator of that outfit coming up in a few minutes, so you can stay with us for that. If you have any questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about another reason horses are sold at auction, particularly foals. It's for their coats.
Well, yes, they're sometimes there's an aspect of high fashion called pony skin, and very young foals are the source of pony skin, which is used for belts and handbags and gloves and such like. Also, the flesh from those foals is sold for food abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But as you'll find later in speaking with the woman who founded Last Chance Corral, some of them are saved. Most of these are foals from an industry called the nurse mare industry. When the owner of a mare who delivers a foal can't or won't nurse, the owner can lease a lactating mare. And I wanted to know what happens to that mare's foal. And those are the sources of pony skin. So that's a huge problem.
Another throwaway.
Another throwaway. Yeah.
Completely throwaway. You know, it's sometimes it's amazing what triggers some of these people to completely change their lives. Some of them have completely changed their lives to do this and start these sanctuaries. It's very humbling. I was thinking of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary and how the founder, Kathy Stevens, started with some land filled with junk. And she cleaned off the land.
Mm-hmm. She was given an opportunity to be the principal of a school, and she decided that rather than do that, she wanted to devote her life to providing rescue for farm animals and horses. So she cashed in her teacher's pension, which was a very big deal, and with help bought this land. All this refuse, cars and junk, metal junk, had to be removed from the land, which is now a very beautiful farm. And she takes in all manner of farm animals, again, only as many as she can support. She, like many of the sanctuaries, has really brilliant ideas for promoting sanctuary work. She offers vegan cooking classes and a chef who gives recipes to interested people. She has a summer camp where kids come to learn how to work with animals. And she rescues mostly thoroughbred horses, but some others as well. And she has galas. They all do different things. Some write books. Some have galas, some have wine tastings, almost all have auctions. In fact, I've contributed photographs to various auctions.
Like silent auctions.
Yeah, silent auctions, right. Online or whatever.
Right.
And some of them have parties of various sorts, all kinds of fundraisers, because the search for funds is unending. These are very expensive animals to take care of.
Anthony in Columbus, you're on the air. Your mother runs a horse sanctuary in Ohio. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, she runs the Circle P Rescue up in Marengo, and actually started that 5 or 6 years ago when they retired. But she's definitely experienced a lot of the challenges you guys have just been talking about as far as fundraising and awareness. And she focuses primarily on rescue horses, but also does other farm animals. Works with the Humane Society to take animals that have been neglected or not cared for, and then also goes and purchases them at auction, tries to rehabilitate them and place them if possible, but otherwise they just live out their lives at the sanctuary.
So that's how she decides. There's a lot of different ways the horses come to her.
Correct. She has some people who have donated them because they can no longer afford to care for them, or seizures in some cases. And then if she has extra space, she'll go to these auctions and try to rescue them there.
Well, great. And it's Forever Free Horse Rescue in Marengo.
No, it's actually Circle P Sanctuary in Marengo.
Okay. Sorry
and
about that.
Name?
It's good about that one.
Yeah, and her name's Lynn Petit. She's just started recently, but she's got about 100 acres up there and I think close to 30 horses.
It sounds wonderful.
It is. I wish I could spend more time up there, but unfortunately, it's a large time commitment.
Right. Well, Anthony, thanks for sharing the story.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Antoinette in Mount Vernon, you're on the air with Kieran Tweedy Holmes. Welcome.
Good morning. We adopted an American Saddlebred gelding from Saddlebred Rescue in Hardwick, New Jersey in 2007. He'd been a show horse for 9 years and was sold at auction in Lexington, bought by the Amish and transported to eastern Pennsylvania, and he was on the road for 10 years. So he was 19 years old when we adopted him. He had been taken to New Holland. They cut his tail off. The hair, that is, and of course sold it because it's very profitable. And he had already been purchased by the meat buyers when a volunteer from Saddlebred Rescue arrived, and he had this USDA sticker on his rump, and he was tied to a fence. And she bargained with him and bought him and brought him home, and we had him until October 2012 when he died of cancer. So he was 25 years old. He was a wonderful horse.
Thank you for that story.
What was his name?
Jem's Harlem Dancer. His sire was one of the best saddlebred stallions in the United States.
The Amish have a trade in the horse auctions?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. But this horse had been treated very well. He was a gorgeous horse. Mm-hmm. He was 17 hands. He was big and strong.
Wow.
And at 19, they only sold him because he could no longer pull the buggy 60 miles round trip.
Wow.
I'm so glad you got him.
Oh, we couldn't have been luckier. He came from a very famous breeding farm in Indiana, and he never was unkind to anybody. We were lucky.
Yes,
well,
and he was
he
too.
Was lucky. Thank you, Antoinette.
I did want to ask, are you familiar with Saddlebred Rescue? They
no.
do a marvelous job.
I know there are specialty rescues in many of the breeds, but I haven't
well,
heard of
that.
Well,
they also rescue Hackney ponies,
mm-hmm.
Morgans, some standardbreds, and draft horses.
And they're in New Jersey, right?
They are. It's Hardwick, New Jersey, and they have a website, saddlebredrescue.org.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Antoinette.
Bye-bye.
Is there any good clearinghouse of sanctuaries, rescue organizations that you know of that people could go to?
Well, we checked online. If you look up horse sanctuaries, you get a long list. As to which ones are best, you look for ones with the global accreditation.
Okay.
Those you can be sure are well run because mm-hmm. the way they get that accreditation is really, really tough. They have to submit all kinds of applications and have on-site visits that are repeated. So, you know, it's not easy to get.
You know, it's interesting. Lots of the horses that you picture in the book and that are written about in the book were considered throwaway good-for-nothings. They were troubled mm-hmm. horses. They were probably mismanaged at some point in their life, and they just were considered incorrigible or something like that. And some of those same horses are being used as therapy animals for children and adults mm-hmm. now, including vets with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes. In fact, my next project that's in planning stage is to do a book on equine therapy. There are so many kinds of therapy around the United States. It's a huge subject for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, for kids with autism and Asperger's and Down syndrome and many developmental disorders, people with physical disorders of all kinds, and of course, the inmates. It's a kind of therapy for them as well. So that's a huge subject, too. And we did run into that everywhere in the sanctuaries that we were working with. A lot of them have therapy programs. The stable where I ride in New York, Ramapo Equestrian Center, also has a therapy program called Full Circle. And they deal with both children and adults. So that's a big subject that's very important in rescue because they often use rescued horses, almost always.
My guest is Karen Tweedy Holmes. She's a photographer. Her work's been exhibited in many places. Right now, it poses the illustrations of a new book. It's called Horse Sanctuary. It was written by Allison Milianis. If you have a question or comment for Karen Tweedy Holmes, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Peter Sagal here. It is so frustrating that I've been doing the show, Wait, Don't Tell Me, for so long, and I don't know what you all look like. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to simulcast our show live from New York City on May 2nd to theaters all over the country. And I want you to come to the theater. I want you to stare at the screen. And if I peer into the camera hard enough, I think I'll be able to see you. That's Wait, Don't Tell Me, live in theaters on May 2nd.
For information and tickets, go to WOSU.org/wait. And thanks for joining us today on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour two of All Sides and Breaking the Color Barrier in Major League Baseball. That discussion from 11 till noon. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for today, a high of 72. More rain for tonight, some rain pretty heavy at times, a low of 49 degrees. Partly sunny, there's still a slight chance of rain on Friday, much cooler actually, a high of just 57. And partly sunny with a slight chance of showers on Saturday, a high of 50. Support comes from Ohio Northern University, investing in the success of its students by offering more than $58 million in scholarships and financial aid each year. ONU offers nationally ranked academics and a 92% job placement rate. Junior Explore ONU Day is April 20th. Details at onu.edu. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about horse sanctuaries in the U.S. and the growing demand for refuge as the economy and the cost of hay and health care force more and more Americans to give up their horses. Still with us is Karen Tweedy Holmes, who collaborated with author Allison Milianis on a new book called Horse Sanctuary. Once again, welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And on top of those issues that I mentioned earlier, there are the unwanted offspring of the mares impregnated only to provide milk for young thoroughbreds with a racing future. The unwanted foals are sometimes slaughtered, often slaughtered, for their meat or fur, or just tossed in the garbage. If they're lucky, they wind up at Last Chance Corral in Athens. We were hoping to talk with Victoria Goss, president of Last Chance Corral. It's a program that's been operating for 19 years in the Appalachian area of Ohio to rehabilitate abused, neglected, and unwanted horses. But we are lucky to have Rachel Bender, kind of her second in command. Has been there for 10 years with us by phone. Hi, Rachel.
Hey there, how are you doing?
Good. I'm going to read an email from Susan to get us started. She wrote, "We adopted two nurse mare foals in 2005 from the Last Chance Corral. The director, Victoria, is an amazing person. Although she's not a veterinarian, while we were there, she placed a nasal gastric tube in a starving baby foal who needed to have milk placed in its stomach so that he knew what it felt like to be fed. Later, Victoria drained a boil in another foal. The woman is a saint. If you have the time and interest, please, please consider adopting one of these babies, the byproducts of the horse racing industry, which places profit above humane treatment. You won't regret it." And Rachel, Victoria has been very, very busy overnight continuing in that pursuit. Tell us about what she was doing last night.
Last night, we actually got five babies in, varying from 5 days to 2 weeks old. And some were skinny, some looked okay, others not so much. The day before that, she got in three starvation cases, which, as you guys were talking about, there were victims of the lack of hay this year. So that makes nine babies at the farm right now, and today we just got a call for another load, so there might be another six to eight within the next couple days.
How do you decide what to take and what you can't take? What are your limits, and how do you make those choices?
That is a really difficult thing. You have to set your emotions aside, and as a rescue, we have to be pretty self-sustainable. Our baby barn is set up for 12 to 18 babies, and if we're full, we have to turn foals away. We can't overextend ourselves, and that's why adoptions are such a vital part of what we do. Inject all the babies in the world and raise them until they're three. But as soon as they're stabilized, they got to go so we can go get more.
And how does the adoption process work?
We have adoption requirements. You have to have experience with babies. You have to have experience training young horses, and a little bit of medical background wouldn't be bad. And basically, you have to have the correct facility, solid fencing, a barn with a stall, and a veterinarian that is willing to be on board with you, because these babies get sick, you know, at the drop of a hat, something could happen. And you come down to the farm and pick out your baby, and you can take them home.
But on these days, because of the economy and so forth, that the adoption, the rate of adoptions, sure, across the country have dropped significantly. Is it the
much
same way for
lower.
You guys? Yeah.
Yeah, much, much lower. Anywhere within 3 hours of us, we've saturated with babies. This year, we've been hauling think we've held 20 so far to Rhode Island. There's not a lot of awareness out there, so we're trying to spread the word out that way. I hauled some to Florida last year. They're going all over the country, which is great. It raises awareness. But as far as homes, they're getting harder and harder to find. Everybody that's able to take one has three, you know.
Karen Tweedy Holmes, in the book, it talks a lot about the importance of networking. Can you talk about that, Rachel? How important it is? You guys talk to each other.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we can stay in Columbus, Ohio. We're at the Equine Affair. We can stay in Columbus, Ohio, and talk to everybody that we see. But if those people go out to 10 people, I mean, that just spreads it so much farther. The lady that we have in Rhode Island, she is in a large horse community. And, you know, a person you talk to, you may touch somebody that just feels compelled to tell three or four other people. And then that somebody will give us a call and say, hey, we can take six of them, you know, and place them out this way. And that's where we find the majority of our homes anymore. Individual adopters, if they can, they already have adopted.
You know, I know the thoroughbred industry has been taking a hit just economically. Everybody has. Has that resulted in the reduction of the number of foals that are being cast away?
It has, yeah.
Okay. Upside, I guess. Silver lining, right?
It is a little bit of silver lining, yeah. One of the farms that we've dealt with for a while had 100 mares, and this year he cut back to about 50 or 60, just because there's no sense in him breeding mares that he's not going to be leasing out. So that is an upside. I mean, it is silver lining. But if the economy comes back, they're going to continue to breed thoroughbreds, and it's just going to continue to happen unless the legislation's passed.
Do you find that any of the breeders call you when they have a foal that's ready?
Are you talking about the nurse mare farmers?
Yeah.
Yes, they do call us. We have a working relationship with about four farms, I would say, at this point, and they do give us a call. We pay them for the foals, and we go and get the foals from the farm. So it's a lot more financially appealing to them to give us a call when they have babies. And I don't know, you have to kind of play the devil's advocate. We can harass them and everything, but then all those babies would be tossed aside and they would die. So we kind of hold our tongues and go get the babies and bring them home. But yeah, we have four farms that do call us when they have a batch.
Rachel, can I ask you a question? This is Karen. When people adopt from you, do they pay? When people adopt a foal from you, do they pay a fee?
They do pay a fee. The fee is generally $50 more than what we pay for them, which is insanely low because at the height of foal season, right about now, we're spending between $700 and $800 a day taking care of these babies. And right now we only have, I think, 9 in the barn. So we're not making any money. It's a pretty good money-losing endeavor.
Yes.
So.
And adoptions are down, too, as we mentioned earlier. So how do you raise money to sustain the operation?
I am here at Equine Affair right now in Columbus, Ohio, and that is where we raise most of our money. Private donors really help us out, fundraising, little things in town. Adoption fees for adult horses in the summertime, we get a lot of really nice horses donated. There's nothing wrong with them. People just want a tax write-off. And the adoption fees from those horses can go into our foal program.
How many horses do you have now?
Right now there are only 6 at the farm, plus the 3 starvations that we got in a couple days ago. Those cases, there's a gelding, a mare, and her 11-month-old baby. So, which isn't really a baby anymore to us, but.
You know, Karen Tweedy Holmes, the book, the foreword of the book starts out talking about Last Chance Corral.
Say that one more time. You're breaking up on me. Sorry.
Oh, sorry about it. I was asking Karen about the foreword, not the foreword of the book, but the
introduction
of the book talks extensively about Last Chance Corral. What was it about Last Chance Corral, you think, that inspired Allison Milianis to start it that way?
Well, I think it's a
pretty cool place. You walk in and it's this big barn that's filled with shavings, and it's like, I mean, it's an intensive care unit for a bunch of baby foals, and seeing foals with no mothers walking around is a pretty, I mean, it touches people. It's not something that everybody sees normally.
Karen?
Something about saving the very young is very appealing. because that's where it starts. Gulliver, a draft cross at Equine Voices, was going to be slaughtered because the owner said he was too ugly to live. He's now the mascot of that entire operation and an absolutely magnificent animal.
So, I've never seen an ugly horse.
No, I've never seen an ugly horse either, but that's a whole, it's a mindset, I think.
I've never smelled a smelly horse. I've never no. seen an ugly horse.
But when you start with the babies and the very concept of throwing babies away because they're not the chosen ones is, you know, it's heinous. So last chance
it's
saves them.
Not right. Yeah, yeah. It's not right. It's supposed to be human nature to take care of the weak and the young. It's what we're supposed to do. They're there that know that they're throwing these babies away. They're babies. They're little. It's just so wrong to me. I don't, and a lot of people, it's just wrong.
And you know that they've never been nursed by their own mothers. And Victoria stands in, and her staff stand in for those mothers with tube feeding and getting those babies to stand up and walk on their own and find good homes. Yeah. It's an extraordinary effort.
And it's heartbreaking seeing the babies come in, and they just kind of stumble around and wander around for the first couple of days just looking for their mothers. And all the stuff that we can do, you know, we can do blood transfusions on site, we can do IVs, tube feeding, anything like that, but we can't be their mom. And that's probably the hardest thing is when they're crying for their moms. We can't do anything about that.
Rachel, can you tell us a story of how Victoria got involved in this in the first place? Victoria Goss, the founder and director of Last Chance Corral.
Yeah, Victoria went to a festival, and she was just a festival with a lot of booths around, and she saw hides, full hides, and she asked where they were getting these from, and the vendor explained to her that these were full hides, and it just baffled her, and she dug deeper into the story, and she found out that there are thousands of these babies being born every year just to die, just for the sole purpose of being ripped from their mothers and thrown away. And that was something, she was already in horse rescue at that point. That was something that she just couldn't live with. She couldn't turn her back on that. And she devoted her entire life to dealing with these babies. And she's been doing a pretty okay job at it, I think.
Is there anything cuter than a baby horse? Did you have fun photographing them, Karen?
Oh, yes. The first time I went, there were two, just the two that you happen to be looking at the moment. And the second time I went, last year, there were seven, one of which was a Percheron foal who couldn't even stand up. And I watched the intubation, the feeding of mare milks with supplement and yogurt and enriching vitamins. And that horse, I'm sure, is long gone from the farm because he recovered and was able to.
Yep, he's gone.
Yeah, he was a beauty.
The first foal, in the book it says, the first foal Victoria rescued was close to death when she found him stretched over a pile of refuse at a nurse mare farm outside of Lexington, Kentucky. The owners assumed he was near death, so they removed him from the stall and discarded him like trash.
Yep, he was on a manure pile, still soaking wet from being born, and they didn't care, and she was pulling out, and she saw him, and she's like, well, I want this one. You know, and she put him in her trailer, and they came out and made her pay for him.
$150.
So, yes. Yep. She had to pay for him, and he was on their manure pile. And I can't remember that baby's name for the life of me, but I know that's one that she holds close to her heart for sure.
Wolf.
Was that the one?
Yeah. She loaded him into her Jeep along with her rescued wolf. Oh, named the wolf. Okay.
Name, yeah.
A sickly foal. Yeah. Well, hey, Rachel Bender, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And good luck today fundraising.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Allison Milianis writes about the issue of humane euthanasia versus slaughter or neglect, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit. It does remain a controversial topic.
Well, yes, obviously injured, very badly injured, sick, and very old horses must be let go to spare them further suffering. And one-on-one, that can be done by a veterinarian in a humane way. But there is no way to humanely kill a massive number of horses. No way. And what goes on in Canada and Mexico with these horses that are shipped is unbelievably awful and inhumane.
It's slaughter.
It's bludgeoning. It's stabbing. That level of cruelty. And the horses are terrified for the whole process. They know what's happening. They are not stupid. So it's very, very bad indeed. And the alternatives to mass slaughter include stopping the overbreeding that goes on in this country, the thousands and thousands, even millions of horses that are bred, many of whom will eventually be sent to slaughter because they can't, the people who have them can't afford to keep them. There are many ways for, as at Black Hills, to use contraceptives properly, darting them. Contraceptives can be delivered by remote means. So in the case of wild horses, a reversible contraceptive can be injected from a distance. So the horse is, you don't have to interact with the horse. And it is reversible. So if you need later on to produce a foal, you can do so. Doesn't hurt the horse, and it's certainly more humane than bringing horses into the world who can't be cared for.
We're running out of time, but another issue associated with sanctuaries are land preservation or land conservation, too. You have to have space to do this.
Oh, yes. And one of the best things about the Black Hills Sanctuary is that the man who founded that is an ardent conservationist.
It could have been a subdivision.
Oh, it could have been, but he decided to buy as many acres as he could in the Black Hills, and he knows every blade of grass on the place, I swear, and its name in Latin. And he knows every animal, all the burrowing owls and the prairie dogs and the eagles and the crows. He knows them all. It's a beautiful thing to see.
Well, if you want to read about that and so many other stories, including that of Victoria Goss at Last Chance Corral down in Athens, the name of the book is Horse Sanctuary. It has a foreword by Temple Grandin. The text is by Allison Milianis, and it's the photography is by Kieran Tweedy Holmes, my guest today in the studio. Kieran, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.